You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Welcome back to the show, Alan. I hope you had a wonderful break.
All too short, obviously. And Jemima was just doing things like a seasoned professional there. That was just fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, I wish you could see this in the studio. That is something else. I mean, I've just had a quick question. This isn't even related, but as a scientist, like when you're on holiday, can you turn it off? Like, can you just look at a car and see a car rather than like a system of
scientific invention?
Well, I got to say that a lot of the public seem to think that university finishes in around about October and starts again in about March, and we do nothing in between, which couldn't sadly be more wrong. No. So, yeah, no, you can't really turn it off. Not really.
No,
there's always something to do.
So. Yeah. Cool. So we've got some cool stories today in the world of science. First of all, like we mentioned before, there is a link between cataracts and dementia. So what exactly is that link and what does that mean for us?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And again, something I never knew about. God, I learn a lot when I do this show. I really do. You know, it's fabulous just sort of trawling the stories and finding all these things that I knew nothing about. So you're absolutely correct. There does appear to be a link between dementia and cataracts. And so it's a bit of a downer topic to start off the year with, I guess. But we talk about Alzheimer's disease, which is a disease of the brain. Dementia is just sort of a general sort of catch-all term for gradual loss of brain function and stuff. And we still don't know how Alzheimer's is caused. We still don't know the cause behind dementia, etc. So a lot of people are doing a lot of studies in this area because obviously it's very, very important. And what they have known or have found out is that there does appear to be some link between sight loss and the development of dementia. So if your sight is going, then you seem to be at higher odds of developing dementia than if you've got perfect vision. So there were some workers at the University of Washington who decided to investigate this and see if there was in fact any link between patients having cataracts and, or not and, or glaucoma, and to see how at risk they were of developing dementia and see if there was any relationship between the two things.
Oh, wow.
So there was a study that was started way back in the 1990s of around about 3,000 people aged 65 or over, and all of the participants had either cataracts or glaucoma. And what they did was they studied this cohort over 8 years, and they found that the people who had had the operation for cataracts, who'd had their cataracts cured by operation, had 0.7 the rate of development of dementia than those who either had glaucoma or didn't do the operation for cataracts.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So there's a definite... Well,
so you're better off if you get the operation for cataracts,
yeah,
is sort of the idea of the study.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And the thing with glaucoma is it's not a sight loss disease. The same amount of light is still getting in your eye and into the back of your eye and into your brain. Whereas the cataracts, the actual cataracts are stopping light getting into the back of your eye and into your brain.
Mm.
And so they've had a good think about this, and, you know, why should there be some sort of link between the whole cataracts and dementia thing? So there's two proposals that they put up. The first is that because the cataracts stop light getting through, then you're getting lower quality visual information or visual stimulus to your brain.
Right.
And so that could possibly be a cause, the quality of visual stimulus that you're getting. Or the other thing is that cataracts are well known to absorb blue light preferentially.
And okay, that's so related to dementia.
Well, very possibly, because apparently our absorption of blue light allows our circadian rhythms to keep going, essentially. So we know when it's time to go to bed, we know when it's time to wake up. Our whole 24-hour thing apparently is determined by the amount of blue light that reaches our eyes. And again, that's why they've got the blue light thing on iPhones and stuff like that.
Yes.
So they're thinking that that might be it as well, that the cataracts are disrupting your circadian rhythms, and there seems to be some sort of link between poor sleep, bad circadian rhythms, and dementia. So, you know, this, I guess it answers a question, but it probably sort of poses some more. But there does seem to be this link between cataracts and dementia, vision and dementia. Yeah. So for goodness sake, you know, honestly, if you've got cataracts out there, I hate to say it, but it would be a really, really good idea to have the operation and get that done. Yeah.
And it's a wonderful starting point for some really interesting research that can be done. Oh, God.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fascinating stuff. Really, really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. Speaking of fascinating and a little bit gross, I received this slightly surprising email from you this morning, actually. It was about the hoo-hoo grubs.
Oh, indeed.
So you should see Jemima's face right now. Basically, University of Otago researchers have started analysing the nutritional value of these insects. What can you tell us about that?
Oh dear. Okay, I think probably the worst thing I've ever eaten was when I was in China and got served up locusts.
Oh yeah.
Buggies.
Yeah, they're not they're
crunchy.
They're like wet cardboard. They're just hard to get down. But I was at a very important person's place for dinner, so yeah, I had to get them down anyway. But hoo-hoo grubs. Okay, so we all know hoo-hoo bugs, the actual beetles and stuff like that. Those big suckers, and they are formed from hoo-hoo grubs, which you've probably seen as well. And if you've been to the Hokitika Wild Foods Festival, very possibly you might well have sampled them. Apparently, they taste like peanut butter.
Yes.
There's no way.
Apparently.
Yeah.
You know this.
Wow.
You've tried them, Jemima.
I was going to say that I have an anecdote regarding the hoo-hoo grub.
Anecdote.
My uncle is a park ranger in Bottle Lake Forest down in Christchurch, and he believes wholeheartedly in the nutritional value of hoo-hoo grubs. He would absolutely stand by this. He loves them. He will actively look for them and just, loves them, agrees that they taste like peanut butter. I've watched him eat many in my life. Don't want to get involved myself. They're yucky as looking, but, you know, good for him. He would stand by the study. So I'm intrigued to hear what they say.
I'm assuming they were cooked. Did we do the whole?
Did the whole thing. Definitely seen some raw ones be consumed in my life. So.
Well, okay, so you'll be thrilled to know that University of Otago researchers absolutely agree with the contention that these things are good.
I'm so excited.
So they were known to be high in fat, but they've also now, thanks to Otago, been found to be very high in protein, and in fact, higher in protein than beef, lamb, chicken, soy, and chickpeas.
Wow.
So around about 25 to 30% of the weight of a hoo-hoo grub is protein. So, and it's also got lots of trace elements, so manganese, magnesium, phosphorus, iron, copper, and zinc. So it's good in that as well.
Wow.
And if you're thinking of swapping over and getting your daily protein from hoo-hoo grubs, you'd only have to eat 75 a day.
to get
the same amount of protein that you would from a 230 gram slab of steak. And I think I know which one I'd be going
but it is you know, there is a lot of conversation about us moving towards eating insects, isn't that? That's where we're meant to be going.
Yeah.
Because that's more sustainable, right?
Well, so I suppose really if hoo-hoo grubs,
if hoo-hoo grubs are going to provide you with such sustenance, then perhaps that's a thing. I don't know. Maybe there's a good way to cook them. I don't know.
But if everyone's going to eat 75 hoo-hoo grubs a day, that's going to be a hell of a lot of hoo-hoo grubs.
Is a hell of a lot of,
I've got to say, I don't really see a hell of a lot of hoo-hoo beetles out my way. I live out in Tararangi, so there should be heaps out there, and you don't really see that many. So it might be a nice idea in theory, but, you know, maybe in practice. I don't know. Anyway, just putting it out there, they are good for you, seemingly. So if anybody's brave enough to Yes. Whip one on the barbie, then yeah.
Somebody's just texting saying, I've eaten a scorpion and it tastes very nutty. Ooh. And I've also eaten a cricket and that tastes a little peppery.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and chocolate covered ants. I can imagine the chocolate for me is the, like, the only bit that would get me through that.
Ooh-lee.
That is
brave. That's all I'll say, brave.
What a wonderful text to receive.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move away from this because Jemima's looking a little bit sick.
Oh, yeah.
So finally, there has the Curiosity rover has been roaming around Mars since 2012.
Absolutely.
And recently they've found a little clue that might hint at past life on Mars.
Well, you know, as David Bowie famously questioned way back in, 71 or 69, is there life on Mars? We still don't know the answer to that. There may have been life on Mars, and that's part of the reason why the Curiosity rover is up there doing its thing. And so what they have found is that they've done some really nice experiments on this. So this little rover's driving around, it's drilling into the rocks, it's taking these samples, it's converting them to methane, and then it's analysing them, for goodness sake. It's hard enough to do on Earth, for goodness sake.
Wow.
And this thing's 80 million kilometres away, give or take, depending where we are in our rotation. And they can do this. It's just extraordinary what they can do. Anyway, right, so they're analysing carbon. And carbon contains isotopes. Right, quick test, what's an isotope?
You've See, I shouldn't do this because I'm a chemist. I've had a discussion with you about isotopes before, and I don't know.
There's something to do with protons in a nucleus.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Right. There's something to do with that.
I've posted this show enough to learn something.
Good, good. Yeah. So it's all to do with the number of protons and the number of neutrons in the nucleus. Okay, so carbon exists basically as two isotopes. So we've got a light one and we've got a heavy one. Mm. And we call them carbon-12 and we call them carbon-13. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is that the carbon-13's got one extra neutron in the nucleus. Other than that, they behave pretty much exactly the same.
Right.
Other than the fact that when you form a chemical bond to a light carbon, it is easier to break than a chemical bond to the heavy carbon.
Mm.
Okay, now the heavy carbon is present in about 1 in 100 atoms, roughly, so about 1%. So okay. 99% of the time you're talking the light carbon, 1% you're talking the heavy carbon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, good old life, nature, biology, et cetera, when it comes to making its molecules of life and converting them to other molecules of life, et cetera, it likes to go the easy route. So it wants to go with the low energy breaking bonds, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's going to break bonds preferentially to the light carbons. And what that does is that enhances the amount of light carbon at the expense of the heavy carbon. So essentially, if you see this difference in the ratio between light and heavy carbon, that's a sign of life, okay? Which is, not to put too fine a point on it, what they've found on Mars, essentially. Okay, so they're seeing this difference in the ratio. They're seeing more light carbon, less heavy carbon. So the ratio of heavy to light is, of light to heavy is greater than it is
and
on Earth.
Is that sort of evidence of like breaking down matter
yes,
or something?
Exactly,
so
exactly
like
right.
If
yes.
there was a thing there, it's broken down and that's what those light, okay.
Yeah, yeah, so that's why they say that it's an example possibly of life, a sounding board for the presence of life.
Wow.
Whereas sort of all of these non-biological processes involve carbon, they really don't discriminate, or they don't discriminate as much as life does.
Mm.
So that's what they found on the good old Curiosity rover, and they're thinking, yes, it's a distinct possibility. There are other explanations that it could have passed through an interstellar cloud, and the carbon in interstellar clouds apparently is enriched in the light carbon as well, so that could have all...
So many possibilities.
It's not an absolutely diagnostic experiment, but it's, again, as all of these things are, very, very interesting, and... obviously the good old rover is going to keep on doing its thing up there and, you know, getting more evidence either for or against the fact that life did perhaps once exist on Mars.
Amazing.
It's very cool.
So there we go. A shame so David cool. Bowie wasn't around to hear this.
To know.
Yes, he died, last week, I think, or 1 or 2 weeks ago, and 2016, I think it was.
Yeah.
So it's just gone well, the anniversary.
Yeah, very timely then. That's good.
Yeah, there we go.
Cool. Anyway, that's all the time we have for Dear Science today. But I really appreciate you coming in and kicking off 2022 with some very interesting facts as
definitely.
Usual.
Definitely. Yeah, amazing as per.
Oh, you're too kind. Goodness.
Well, we will catch you next time.
Absolutely. Cool. See you guys. Again.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.